Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Now, John, that's as if we needed it, the sobering news from the retailers telling us that yesterday evening prices went up by 6.9 cent per litre, and this evening at midnight tonight into tomorrow morning they'll go up by 6.3 cent per litre, underlining the kind of chaos that's out there at the moment in terms of the prices people are paying because of the chaos unleashed by Bibi Netanyahu and Donald Trump in the Middle East, which shows no signs of stopping, unfortunately, and the Irish government are scrambling to respond.
Absolutely. We've been here before, only this one is worse. We were here in the wake of February 2022, just 4 years ago. The government, it is, as I listened to Michael Cahill and to reflecting, you know, the concerns of parties, all politicians, because this affects absolutely everyone. And priority, I think, has to be, everyone will agree, trying to cushion the effect to the most vulnerable, to the young, to the elderly, to people struggling, already struggling on low incomes. But the whole supply chain has been disrupted. I suppose one of the few merciful things about this was that fiendish pair, Netanyahu, Trump, did not kick this off last Halloween and drag us through a pretty gloomy winter and very wet, if not inordinately cold winter. At least you have a bit of breathing space that heating oil particularly will tail off. But I'm very conscious, every word I say at this point, I know there'll be a lot of people in cars down your part of the country doing big work-related commutes and just trying to do the sums in their heads and wonder, you know, can they sustain this escalating bill for diesel or petrol particularly? And, you know, is it worth the candle trying to keep the day job going, you know?
Yeah, and it feeds into everything else then, John. The worry about the impact, the downstream impact on the price of goods in shops. The worry then for cafe owners, restaurant owners, hotels opening up for the new season amidst all the uncertainty with international tourism and others, oil prices, aviation fuel, all of those sort of things feed into this feeling of doom and gloom.
Yeah, and simple things. I always remember in Killarney talking to a guy who had a bar job, and he said overtime and late work that he used to do over the summer season, in the intense part of the season, paid a lot of his back to school, his children's back to school costs, you know, the following September. There are all these things that are suddenly, you know, there's a question mark thrown up about them, and they are the stuff of daily life, and you know, the struggle to put food on the table and keep the wolf from the door, quite simply, you know.
Yeah. John, on Tuesday then, what has it come down to for the government? The indications are there's not going to be this blanket, you know, energy credit for everybody. There's calls from the Soc Dems saying, look, you need to target it. This needs to go to the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
What about everybody else? How much pressure will be on, do you think, on Tuesday?
There's huge pressure. I mean, yesterday we saw the hauliers meeting the transport minister and laying it on the line that they would have to take radical protest action, which will compound ordinary people's misery, but it expresses their frustration and the narrow margins that some of them have to live with. As you say, no, forget about the idea of the type of grants that we got in recent years against the electricity bill. One very simple realpolitik reason for that is the government has already absorbed the flak for the abolition of these electricity allowances, and bringing them back opens them again to criticism, as you said, the Soc Dems, Labour, others demanding more targeted measures rather than just blanket measures, which also go to people who aren't so close to the firing line on this one. So they bring them back, take flak for bringing them back, and then they know they're storing up future flak when they're going to have to be abolished again. So what are they going to do? They're going to have to cut the duty on diesel and petrol and bring some semblance of moderation to the price at the pumps. Remember, the point is frequently made that when the retail price goes up, the government's tax take in terms of all the various levies goes up because it's a percentage. So there is scope there for some kind of a measure. They'll be looking at the fuel allowance, but the fuel allowance really is more a matter for the autumn. There is a much bigger job to be done to look at what's going to happen in the autumn into next winter to deal with the situation. If this drags on, or if some element of it, which is likely, the energy market disruption is likely to continue. And they're going to have to be other more targeted measures at categories of welfare recipients who will need additional hope and help. Sean Kelly was interesting there talking about the summit in Brussels yesterday that Micheál Martin attended. There are messages kind of signalling a direction of travel at EU level, but it is complicated. Your questions to Sean Kelly, Sean Kelly's replies, it is difficult. In the background to that, the European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde was warning that there can be no rush of blood to the head among leaders on this. It's her job, of course, to try and keep inflation down. And the fear amid all this is that when you start trying to remedy people's energy misery, you can in turn feed inflation and feed price rises more generally.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're going to have to be a big stock take, but they're certainly a point has been reached in Ireland. We are promised, as Michael Cahill said to you earlier, the government have promised action and the unveiling of a package this coming Tuesday.
Yeah, John, final point on this and the wider context of it, and Sean Kelly talked about this. Sound a bit exasperated. Where is all this expectation of the EU to solve all these problems coming from? He said the real story here is that the UN is a total failed organisation now from that point of view. And is that, politically speaking, the reality of the situation? When it comes down to it, you look at China providing money to the IRGC by buying Iranian oil from their shadow fleet. That's keeping them afloat, even though they're widely regarded as, you know, nefarious bad actors and have been for many years. We have this, you know, unilateral action now, no international law anymore. It's all self-interest, isn't it? Should we just close down the UN?
Well,
for all it's worth,
it is tempting, and there are arguments for saying that. But the trouble is, the UN right now is the only thing we have. I mean, the big difficulty with the UN is the Security Council structure, and the fact that it is a late 1940s model of world geopolitics. Five big powers with a veto, and it's frequently used. So. the UN, I mean, there are many, many plans and proposals to reform the UN, to change it. For example, to give a bigger say to emerging countries like Brazil and India and Pakistan and other, you know, which are effectively big world economies. There's all sorts. But there is a point to be made about the European Union, and I think Sean Kelly again was kind of alluding to it there. The very minute, I mean, in fact, some of the same people who accuse the European Union of being a toothless tiger in these situations, in the next breath, sound off about a pure and rarefied form of Irish neutrality and sound off warnings about European armies and all sorts. Well, you can't have it both ways. The European Union was not designed for situations like this. either, and there are limits to levels of cooperation and coordinated action. And I think, I do believe, having covered in excess of 100 leader summits over a long period of years in Brussels and elsewhere, I do think that there is a lot of goodwill and effort to try and pull things together, and particularly to try and set some structures in motion to protect the more vulnerable sections of our society.
Okay. All right, John, stay with us. We're going to talk more about the political week, including Micheál Martin's trip to the White House to meet Donald Trump, amongst other things. We'll get to that after we take these.
Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Yeah, John, Micheál Martin, in the midst of all this chaos, Micheál Martin went on the annual St. Patrick's Day trip to the White House, much more than just the Oval Office meeting, of course, at hand for the Irish delegation over the last number of days. But what's your view on how he got on with Donald Trump and the remarkable outcome of him defending Sir Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, was incredible, and talking Winston Churchill as well in the Oval Office. I'd nearly argue that this day, whatever about Irish-American relations, this is a very good day for the repairing of the Irish-British relationship.
I think so, yeah. I think without any doubt, very well received in London, and rightly so. Micheál Martin did. He put in a stunning performance. Right enough, he did meet a more benign Donald Trump. He certainly was very far from the vengeful, ignorant so-and-so that confronted Vladimir Zelensky a couple of years ago and publicly humiliated him. He was very much in avuncular mode, very much in kind of hibernophile mode. I like the Irish, I like Ireland sort of stuff. Perhaps conscious that he's due here later this year for the Irish Open, and very probably next year again for the Ryder Cup in Adair. So we shall see. But Micheál Martin, I think perhaps emboldened, did jump in and talk up Keir Starmer. I'm sure that was appreciated. And I'm sure it is very helpful in London-Dublin relations, which are going well. I mean, we had Keir Starmer in Cork the other week. We've had the first real engagement by a British Prime Minister in the Good Friday structures, the British-Irish structures, which came post-1998 Good Friday Agreement. We've had some. I've covered some of those things. It seemed like the office cat was sent from London to fill the gap, where the Taoiseach has pretty consistently attended at the appropriate level, and senior ministers have attended at the appropriate level, and show that Ireland is taking these structures very seriously and want to make them work. I think Keir Starmer is the first since Tony Blair to engage so actively at that level. So I think a bit of a gamble by Micheál Martin to stick his oar in, and in effect, quite politely and diffidently, but for all that, at the same time, contradict the Donald in his own office. I think it was plucky enough, and I think a very good thing to do. And he got away with it. He got a good outcome. And he's entitled, because if the shoe was on the other foot, if we had another outcome, we'd be here nitpicking and saying, well, he should have done this or he should have said that. And the fact is, he went in and managed very, very well.
Yeah. Okay, John, from that, the Dáil this week. It was a strange week in Dáil Éireann, wasn't it? Back straight away after St. Patrick's Day. That's kind of how it fell. A lot of absentees as well. Yeah. And other issues. The Taoiseach not present out for obvious reasons as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Taoiseach basically, back and then to Brussels yesterday and today. So busy week and strange, characterised by absence. and Sinn Féin doing their best to fill the gap and get in there on the cost of living issues. Piers Doherty, with his memorable song bite, the prices aren't standing still, unlike the government amid this crisis. So, as I say, odd. And in other years, it has to be said that the Dáil was frequently just put into suspense, and there would be even arguments where we're coming towards the Easter break. This day, two weeks will be Good Friday. So, you know, there would be arguments for them to kind of dodge and not have Dáil sessions, but they did. So I suppose, again, credit for that, because, of course, all the surveys tell us that the government's ratings and the feel-good factor is always better when the Dáil is not in session. But they're back again. They were there. They were at it this week. As I say, characterised by absence, they're back again next week. And I think the following, I haven't seen the following week's schedule, but they're certainly back 3 days again next week.
Yeah. John, finally, there's been a high-profile trial playing out in London over the last number of days. This is the civil case, which is alleging that Gerry Adams was responsible for IRA bombings in Manchester and London in 1973 and 1996. The closing arguments, 8 days of the civil trial at the Royal Courts of Justice in London, Edward Craven KC said the delay of the claimants taking the claim against Mr. Adams had prejudiced his ability to challenge the allegations. John Clark, injured in the Old Bailey bombing in 1973, Jonathan Ganesh and Barry Laycock, who were injured in the London Docklands and Manchester bombing in 1996. All this playing out fairly high profile, obviously, John. What do you make of it? Will this have an impact on Northern Ireland relations, or is this just a matter for Gerry Adams and whether he was in the IRA or not? The eternal question we've been asking for the last 30 years.
Yes, absolutely. Gerry never in the IRA, Adams, and the issues which surround that. It's a very interesting one. There are some comparisons. Last May, he won 100,000 damages from a jury in the Dublin High Court. Now, this one is being tried by a judge only. There are a number of procedural points, not least the statute of limitations. Ideally, this should have been done within 3 years. You have 3 years to take your case to court to claim damages. So that's the kind of trial within a trial. But this will be decided by a judge who, curiously or serendipitously, has the name Jonathan Swift, of course, the very famous 18th and 19th century pamphleteer and writer, a big figure in the history of these islands also. But anyway, that's probably coincidental. But he has a number of points, but it is entirely his decision. So compare and contrast the Dublin and London High Court operations. The specifics of this case is that the trio bringing it are seeking just symbolic damages of £1 sterling, a feeling in the background that should Mr. Justice Jonathan Swift rule against Gerry Adams, that there may follow other class actions for damages. The judge rule that Mr. Adams was an IRA senior IRA commander all those years, there may well be other claims from people who suffered injury, bereavement, damage, etc., and for far heftier damages than symbolic £1 sterling. So there's a lot riding on this. A reserved judgment, it may take weeks, it may even take months, but it will be watched very closely.
Yeah, indeed. And to keep the literary story going, Gerry Adams talked about two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be the one traveller long I stood. I looked down as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. The road not taken by Robert Frost. We've Robert Frost and Jonathan Swift. We'll see where it goes from there. John, That's for sure. And we'll keep an eye on it. Okay, that's John Downing there with Call from the Dáil.